Hey, everybody, you're listening to episode 277 of the Shop Talk Show. This week's episode is brought to you by Rollbar, catch errors before your users do, and A Book Apart. You know, those tiny books that help you learn good things good. Well, we'll talk more about it later in the show. We got a good show for you today. But for now, Dave, let's kick things off. Hey there, Shopper Maniacs. You're listening to another episode, Summer Edition, Beach Body Edition of the Shop Talk Show. I am flexing my abs, Chris. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Throes of summer, although it's cloudy and cold here, but whatever. I'm sure it's hot in Austin.
Hot. So hot. It's 100. I don't leave my house. It's too hot.
Oh my God, it's just too hot, Chris.
I'm melting. I'm not jealous. Kids from the rays of the evil sun. That's what I do all day.
Yeah.
It's my life's purpose. Hey, Chris, what are we doing here today? I don't see anybody in the studio. It's like tumbleweeds over here.
No. Next week, we do have a guest. But this week, again, it's just you and I. I thought we'd just chat about some stuff. Absolutely plenty to talk about. Some great questions from everybody out there in the audience. We always appreciate that. And, of course, we can just talk about some random stuff. One thing occurs to me, Dave. I don't know. I don't have a...
You're going to hit me with a zinger? You're hitting me with a zinger.
Yeah, but it's building up a philosophical zinger. In a way.
Oh, a Philly zinger.
Well, okay. It's about... it's just because it's something I've experienced that I haven't in a minute, but it probably is very common to lots of people in that... first, I'm working on like a little side project thing. For one thing, it was just like I had this idea. I had some like success... like a month ago with, if somebody's trying to lose weight, you write, everybody says, write down what you eat, have a food log, really useful. Mm-hmm. And I always used to roll my eyes at it. It's like, oh my God, my whole life is just little dumb, little tasks like this. Like I need one more. And I never did it. Even when I was at my best, when I was like going to Hilton Head Health and like really doing good, I never did that part because I just found it tedious and obnoxious. But I just tried it. I just made a I just got out a piece of paper and I wrote it down and I left it right on the counter so anybody could see it kind of thing, you know, it gave me some accountability and I liked it. It worked really well for me. And then I stopped again. Oh, damn it. So but I was like, oh, you know, as a nerd, I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a little app, you know. Just my own.
You gotta write an app to achieve health. I think so. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, an app.
Write an app. Spend a few weeks on it, you know, and then
which is silly.
How you get healthy.
But everyone, of course, the truth is that I'm using this. It's part of a workshop. So I'm giving this. I've given it once. I'm giving it again in Dayton next week at their Build Right thing. I'm giving it at AEA Chicago. That'll be cool. And a few more times. So CSS Dev Comp, where we'll both be at. None of these are sponsoring the show, by the way, but at the moment. But I'm going to be giving this workshop and stuff.
So in addition to being an app that helps you personally, it's sort of a manifestation of some ideas that you're kind of building out and rolling into talks and things.
Right. And this food log part isn't really a part of it. We kind of like build a website in it. And at first I just did it with like, I used Pug and stuff. And I just was like, the point of this workshop isn't necessarily the technology that builds this website. In fact, it's almost the opposite. It's almost like, I don't really care about all the pieces that put together a website. It could be anything. I care about performance. I care about semantics. I care, you know, like it's kind of like as front-end developers, you should be pretty adaptable to that kind of thing. And what matters is all kinds of other things. Anyway, I know that's a little abstract, but it all comes together in the workshop. So I was like, you know what, just to, you know, put my money where my mouth is or whatever, I'm going to rewrite this same website now that it's done a couple of different ways. So I rebuilt it in React, and that was fun. And then while I was in there, I was like, you know what, maybe this food log thing would work well in that React thing. Maybe I'll do that part in Vue or something. In Firebase, because you need a place to store the data or whatever. So I've been just chugging away at it a little bit. Just like here and there, I'll be like, oh, I feel like working on that a little bit. And it's been a little slow going. Like, I've been really enjoying working on it, But it's like, I'm not nearly as fast because I'm not nearly as comfortable with all that. Like, I've never really used Firebase on like a pseudo production thing before. So like when I go work on it, I'm like, oh, let me struggle through all this auth stuff. Okay, now I got that. How do I like organize this database? I'm not really like a database organization kind of guy. And like, I want to do this by date. Like, what day did you eat the food? So like, and I want to have multiple entries on any given day. So how do I like combine those entries on a single day? It's been really not a struggle, I would say, because I haven't been like stonewalled by anything. But certainly when I'm responsible for that, and I'm responsible for like front-ending the thing and like making it all happen, and the design of it, and the UX of it, and all that stuff, really it's hard.
This
is hard.
It's so much work. That is so much work. I've been there. I know exactly what you're feeling. It's
because it's just design, or if it's like I already have a design and all I have to do is HTML and CSS on it, it's not hard for me. I'm like cruising through it. I'm like, this is fun. Boom, 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 boom. Like, I can do that stuff all day. But as soon as like the pile of tech gets too thick, and there's parts in there that you're comfortable with and parts with you're not, it really turns into a little quagmire of like, oh my God, I got myself in too deep.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's the context switching. This has been kind of a phrase. Sophie Shepard had a really great post on that. But hers was more from like managing people and then switching the context to this. And she was kind of talking about getting like, feeling a lot of burnout kind of building up from context switching. And
I remember her post about this. Yeah, it was good. Like, that's what causes the stress is the like, if all of a sudden you're dealing with people 1 second and CSS the next, you're like, oh my God, brain.
You're like, yeah. You're kind of overload. And I think in my experience, that context switching from front to end to back end is also difficult. I know people can do that, and to design like those three disciplines, you end up, it's quite a bit of mental effort to kind of switch. I have an app I'm working on. It's kind of a Rails app for a client, and I'm also doing like mostly like a pattern lab kind of front end thing for another client. And it's good, but it's like you're in the CSS and you're just kind of like, okay, you're at the module, you're cutting things up into just tight modules. And then like the next day you have to switch over to the Rails situation and you're just like, oh boy, okay, Rails. okay, I type in these three spells into the command line and does it delete it? Oh, I hope it doesn't delete it this time. You know, and it's just, I think it's that,
and you're not at your best then, you know?
I mean, I'm at my mediocre, same mediocreness. I think I'm really thriving in my mediocreness. But it just makes it harder. I think that's kind of the TLDR is it, like when you're switching context. At least
you've changed days in your little scenario. You're like the next day. I think it's particularly difficult when you're like wrote a line of CSS and then you're like, oh shoot, I need to change something in the controller for that. Oh shoot, the database isn't structured well enough for that. And like in the same 5 minutes, you're changing major stacks.
Mm-hmm.
Especially hard for me.
Yeah. And there's even like, I've started seeing things in four dimensions, and this is weird, Chris. I know you're not actually able to, but so you have kind of a breadth of browsers, right? Like, you know, this would be one dimension, like your top five browsers or something. And then you have another kind of mobile desktop dimension. And then you have kind of a front end, back end design dimension, you know, kind of like the kind of, I guess, aesthetic or I guess how metal things get, you know, aspect. And then you have the browser support, which is like all of time. You have to support all of time. And it's just this, like, there are a lot of things happening in this, you know, I know the like classic thing is like, my nephew can build a website, but if somebody's nephew can manage all this like headspace, I would like to hang out with them. and let them pay them to build my website as well. Because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. So, that's all I got, Chris.
I like that. That was a lot. Because I didn't, we didn't even go into the, we kept that very high level. But as soon as you get even more nuanced with the different things you need to worry about, it can all get very overwhelming.
Well, yeah, like I you're using Firebase, which I think is great for the kind for like a log. Because you just spit, another entry into the JSON blob that Firebase kind of holds for.
Well, let's solve my problems for me. Let's do this. Like, okay, what's the key? Like, let's say I have a database and the object is log, right? So just log is just sitting there like a piece of the interior JSON. What's the next key child down from that? Is it a date? Is the date the key?
Yeah, probably a timestamp. Okay. But you'd have to do like UTC, you don't want to do local.
Then I mean, like, let's say, I go in there and I say, I ate a bag of Cheetos and it was one of those 100 calorie bags. So I type Cheetos, I type 100, I hit enter, it sends it up to Firebase. But then I eat an apple, the apple's another, and that's a separate entry. Those will be separate UTC things, which now means that, like, how do I query for them both and say, okay, on this day, you've eaten 200 calories now?
How does your bundle? Well, you could do the day by,
the keys the day.
Query a within.
And then the value would be an array of...
Well, see, that's what's weird about Firebase. And this is, kind of another dimension, is Firebase doesn't allow you to store arrays. You can't just put up, ID-less, in an array, it's index 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Firebase only holds objects, basically. So your objects have to have a little ID on them, which isn't too far away from how a database works. You just have to create an ID.
And it will just kind of automatically do that for you, too, if you don't. Right. If you just up a raw array, I think it just assigns a zero to the front.
Assigns a zero. And that could work. But I think you'd want to kind of leverage that ID. So you could just be like, okay, get this object.keys, get me all the keys. And then I'm going to try to figure out which keys are time stamped within this day.
That would be all right. So if I send up the key, I'll make the key unique based on day, month, year. And then if there's already an existing one, it doesn't override it. It just appends another object to it. And the sub object does have a UTC.
Yeah. You could do the first key is the day, and then there's a sub, and then your day.
Infinite sub keys.
Yep. Yeah. Your day has X number, N number of items, which is, never going to go over 10 or 20.
Yeah.
If you eat 20 things in a day,
individually,
cool, you had a good day and you individually logged them, you probably wouldn't out of shame. But if you individually logged them, it'd be pretty good, but
for me, it's usually Chili's 2700.
just the you like to abstract.
Try to be accurate. That stuff has been a little blocky for me, but still, I'm referencing all kinds of stuff on my own website. There's a great CSS Tricks post about auth and Firebase and saving stuff. There's another one about React forms and refs and how you use all that. And I'm it's great for me because I remember editing these articles and being this is all work. This is good. Publish. Great. But then it's a different story when it's I need to read it. And I'm this is really well done. Good job, previous self, editing this article.
Yeah. Good job. You really bailed me out. I think that's why you blog, right? I think people don't realize you blog so you can remember the dumb little tricks you did earlier. I tweet out a lot of today I learned, yesterday, I think it was when we were recording this yesterday. I learned that if you have will change transform, you have a position fixed element inside will change transform. The parent has will change transform. It behaves like position absolute. So if you have a modal that's supposed to appear in the middle of the screen, it does not, Chris. It appears in the middle of the gigantic page that you have created. So
right.
the trick is you change it to will change auto, and that fixes it.
What?
Never in my life would I have learned about this. All of a sudden, it was like I'm building like a little modal component on this page, and I had to kind of do the will change transform to like do like a hamburger menu flyout panel kind of thing. So I just had that on there because I was like, oh, that'll be performant and GPU and all that. And then all of a sudden, I go like next week, I'm working, I'm testing out this modal, and it doesn't work. And I'm like, that's weird. And it works in Edge just fine because Edge doesn't use will change transform, but it's broken in Firefox. And
I didn't even know you're supposed to use. I always thought the will change was like, it's not something you ever set in CSS because we were taught that we were supposed to set it on the fly with JavaScript as it's needed.
Yeah, I mean, it might. I've always thought it was kind of like, inform the browser the best you can that something's going to change about this. So I could be totally wrong on that. But in general, it was just kind of like, the way I feel like will change was pitched was like, yeah, it's this super property that turns on the GPU, buddies. So
it kind of was. It was meant to be like, y'all are doing too much of this translate Z0 stuff to activate the thing, and that's a hack, so let's give you a property to do it. But then right away it was, don't do that. I don't know. Yeah. We need more research on that. But I'm glad you figured that weird one out. That's
yeah. So it's just weird.
There's a couple other. I have some notes of stuff like that that have been killing me too that I haven't turned into blog posts. But it was like I was using position sticky on a thing, which is that like freebie where you like, I don't know, you scroll down and you passed a certain point and the element becomes like position fixed for a minute until there's not room for it anymore, and then it goes back to normal. It's a really great property, I think, for something that used to be a huge pain in the butt to pull off. It's quite useful, I think. And then I just had like a parent element around it, like two parents up that had overflow hidden on, you know, like, I don't know. I'm still at this point in my CSS career where I'm just like, I'm just going to throw overflow hidden on this thing because I don't know. Generally looking at it, it seems like not an element that nothing should stick out of. And I find overflow hidden solves all kinds of problems. You're like, oh, weird scrolling thing, overflow hidden. Oh, this grid isn't snapping into like the position that I think it should be, overflow hidden. Oh, flexbox thing is being weird, overflow hidden. Like, I use overflow hidden a lot to solve weird problems. And I think that's one of these like CSS things that like leads to the like the Peter Griffin GIF or whatever is. I just had like a grid container kind of thing, and I just slapped an overflow hidden on it one time, and it solved my problem. And I, you know, went home and had a beer or whatever, only to find out that like some child element two levels deep, the position sticky didn't work on it anymore. I'm like, this doesn't, I don't get it. Why would this element care about that?
That happened to me with the client. I thought I used position sticky. I was like, look at me, Mr. Progressive Enhancement. Like that'll just gracefully not work. And I'm the best. And then they integrated it. It had like an overflow hidden div somewhere in the thing. And they're like, the position sticky stuff doesn't work. And I just was like, why? And I'm Googling, trying to figure it out. And I come to like a 2014 tweet of mine where I complained about it. And I just was like, oh, thank you, past self, for complaining on Twitter, because this is just what a weird thing that this
is. It is weird. There's no document, as far as I can tell. I'm sure there's some kind of spec or something somewhere, but it really doesn't seem like, why would position sticky care in this particular case? It really doesn't make sense.
No. And you can even overflow X, which I'm just trying to lock down one dimension. It still breaks.
Oh my God. So here's another one that I saw this in Web Platform Daily the other day.
This is Zinger's cast. Yeah. This is good. CSS
Zinger. Well, this is, it's a little bit of a zinger, and just one that resonated with me that it was one of those things that are like, why wouldn't this work? Oh, this is so confusing to me thing that I think a lot of us intuitively understand. I'm sure you'll have no trouble with this, but you imagine you have a div or a section or something, and it has like height equals, a height of 600 pixels. Great. You put another div inside that and say height equals 50%. What do you get? 300 pixels, right? It's totally going to work. Mm-hmm. Totally going to work because the parent has an explicit height on it. Or anything like as like that div, that parent div that we said height equals 600 pixels on, it could also be a Flex container. Like, there's all these like states that parent could be in which that sub, that child with the height of 50% can be in where that will work. But not if it's just some, you know, straight up div. If it's just div and it has nothing special going on, and then it has a sub div where the height is 50%, it just won't do anything. That height 50% is just like totally ignored.
Just bails out.
Yeah, like even if that parent element has all kinds of stuff in it and it ends up being thousands of pixels tall, that sub element with height equals 50%, I'll totally bail. It'll just be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I feel like that can be majorly confusing to kind of beginner people. It'd be like, no, that yeah. It's just that parent has like an unset height kind of thing. Like, I know it has a height, but it's because you weren't explicit about it or it was min content or whatever. It just does nothing. And just one of those confusing things about CSS.
CSS, what a world. I felt like I had another zinger while you're talking, but we'll come back to it. I feel like most of CSS is just knowing the quirks, you know, just knowing why things don't work. And you just got to kind of.
And then those things become intuitive, which is strange. But so they become a little hard to teach and know about. And then you get good at it and then you don't feel so good at it. There's something there, something confusing about this. Anyway, although we're 20 minutes into this thing, so let me, we're going to do a shout out. Our friends at sidebar.io. I don't know if you get this or don't, but it, not only is it a nice website, like go to sidebar.io. In fact, they have some nice position sticky stuff going on if you visit on a large screen device where the kind of the day of the week kind of sticks to the side. It's pretty nice.
Ooh, fancy.
Anyway, it's 5 links a day. That's the reason why you might go there. It's because you have 5 minutes and you're like, I feel like looking at interesting things. And so you can submit links to it too. If there's an interesting thing, go there and pop on your own link. But I don't know, just interesting stuff. I get it over email. Like, I go to the website once in a while, but every single day I get an email from Sidebar that's just 5 interesting links. And the chances of there being at least one thing in there that is interesting to me that I click on and read is very, very high. So check out sidebar.io, maybe get the email, whatever. They also wanted to call out the fact that you can buy a link in there. You can buy a sponsored link in Sidebar. Goes out to over 40,000. They generally target designers. And if you want to do that, I mean, you can sponsor Shop Talk Show as well, too. You might as well do both. But you get 20% off at Sidebar by going to sidebar.io/sponsor. Use the coupon code SHOPTALK and reach those people. Apparently, their stats for how effective it is are super good, which I don't doubt.
Sidebar is a good one.
Yeah,
I have about tens of these, and you know, when most of them, Chris, are very, very long, and you're just like, well, I don't have time to read a single one of these. So, yeah. But when it's just a little bit of like a 5, you're like, oh heck yes. So, all right, well, shall we get into the meat and potatoes here of the Shop Talk Show? Questions and answers, Chris. Mm-hmm. We got one from Steven Aldis. Writes in, I find myself the sole full-time web developer at a small marketing design agency that primarily builds WordPress projects.
Been there.
The question I have for you is about file organization and how to best approach it for the team. My method of approaching files is to break pages down into sections and have corresponding SCSS files for each section. I find this method to be very easy for tracking down issues and reusing elements without having to add additional lines of code. However, the founder of the company has a web development background and likes to keep all the code for a template in one file and all the CSS in one file. In his mind, it's easier, quicker to find the lines of code. We have had many discussions on this and can't seem to find common ground. The end goal is to maintain a healthy relationship with the person who gives me a job and creates maintainable, scalable system, to create a maintainable, scalable system that's easy to collaborate in.
Well, that last section is the whole telling part of that. Like, if you have an opinion and it's different from your boss, I guess, and your boss feels very strongly about this thing and it's turning into an argument, I would do what your boss says. Not not to like back down from this thing or do something you think is wrong, but the reason I think you should go with what your boss likes is because it doesn't matter. Like one, I feel like these days I'm never like, oh, what file is something in? It's always like some kind of soft search or some kind of integrated IDE way to get to that file, or very, very likely find in project where you just type in the thing that you're looking for and it zooms you right there. So I don't care if it's broken into different files or it's in one file or whatever. There's always some like IDE way to like zoom to right to what you need. And if you don't have that, it's worth getting, because I feel like that is a way that's some like level up IDE stuff that's like worth getting there. I've kind of stopped caring about the like how you split up the files. Like if somebody's has, if your boss has a strong opinion about it, just let them have it.
Yeah. I think you're gonna have to do it your boss's way. However, I don't think your boss is right. I think in general, you know, it's a pretty accepted computer science practice that like things should be broken up into small, well-formed, easy to work on modules. You know, your code should probably be broken up, but maybe he doesn't like to have a SAS dependency in the pipeline, and he'd rather just have, you know, a giant CSS file that, you know, everyone kind of works on. But if you're having a giant CSS file, having like done that in the past myself, there's a few tricks you can do to keep that organized. And it comes in the form of like gigantic like comment header blocks, you know, like,
yeah, sure.
You should just document the hell out of each one of those. Just big old, I make the little slash star, and then I just put my finger down on the hyphen, and I make like 80 hyphens, and then you hit return, put another star, hit return, put another star, type the name of the kind of module or the section you're kind of describing in the next block of CSS, and hit return.
Probably another something star, that you can search return. For as well. I've been enjoying
that. Yeah, basically just make sure it's like documented so future people can just hop in wherever. Usually there's like a methodology, like we set all our base styles here, and then we work on, you know, the article, and then it's the post listing. You know, WordPress is probably...
If you find your finger hurting from scrolling up and down that file, something's got to change. You either got to break up the file, which I know your boss doesn't like, or you need to find some search collapsing, some kind of something, because it does seem a little, like, ridiculous. If you just have this monster CSS file that you're constantly just like... on your mouse to find what you need, that seems silly. So, and just to be clear, hopefully your boss understands that... Yes, in production, we need to concatenate our CSS, but why do you care so much about what we do in development? Like, hopefully your boss is smart enough to understand that there's a distinction between those things, and just because you have 30 CSS files doesn't mean that you're shipping 30 CSS files to production, you know? Just to be sure, you never know what people know, you know?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, too, like, I mean, any IDE has find in project, you know? So it's really not hard to find... what you're looking for in a
I remember project, like, you know? It must have been like 7 years ago. I had some strongly held opinion about this, and Doug Niner. Remember Doug? I hope Doug's doing well.
Remember Doug? He's in Iowa. He's got a farm in Iowa.
Yeah. He basically has my opinion now, because Doug's always 7 years ahead of the world, I think. Was like, dude, no, it really, like, I can write CSS faster than you, because I'm just going to do find in project and jump right to where I need and change the CSS. Like, it doesn't matter. He was trying to drive that point home with me, and I'm like, no, Doug, separate files. I don't know. Like, I can't even remember what my opinion was at the time, but find in project, really useful.
Yeah. No, I think, I think, in general, I think do what your boss wants. I think comment the heck out of it and make it put these ugly like dividers in there to help you navigate it. I started using Minimap, you know, the mini maps on the side.
Yeah.
Chris, do you use that? I
don't know. What? Tell me what you're
saying. When I first saw it in Sublime Text, I said, this is the dumb. Whoever, people just need to learn how to like search a file or whatever. But I use Minimap all the time. Somehow I turned it on or something, but I use it all the time. And it gives me kind of a sense of how big this file is, where I'm at in the file, how gnarly, you know.
Like, my number one use case for it is in search results. If I see some block of minified code, I'm like, oh, I'm going to skip over that chunk because it's that's obviously not what I'm looking for. I've also started to, oh God, this is a hole. We're going to rabbit hole this again. I've started to be firm about this with myself. If I find something in search results that's a, like a minified, useless thing that shows up, I'll just stop and take the time to figure out what file it is and make sure that it's in my project preferences to not show up in search. Because find in project is so important to day-to-day dev that if your find in project is returning a bunch of garbage, that's like unacceptable. It needs to, you need to fine tune that. Like, it make sure to ignore this type of file or this folder where that file lives or something. Because that can be done in any editor. Make sure that your find in project is returning really good stuff and that you're not seeing giant blocks of minified garbage there.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Rollbar. That's rollbar.com. It's full stack error monitoring for your web app. It's like ridiculously easy to install and works in all kinds of major languages and frameworks and just everything. A JavaScript app with any framework, Python, Ruby, PHP, Java.net, iOS stuff, WordPress, Rails, whatever. Whatever, you install it in there. And it captures and tracks the errors that have. I'm saying there's about 100% chance that your app is throwing errors of some kind, probably errors that users are seeing too. How do you know that that's happening? Where do they go? Do you have it set up to like email yourself or whatever? We've all done that to some degree. No, you need to be tracking them for real. You need to know how often they're happening. It'd be nice to look at a stack trace. It'd be looked at when it happened. And so Rollbar is that. It's like a dashboard for all the errors that your app is throwing. And you can set up notifications for them. Like, send it to me, you know, like I only want one email, not 1,000 emails when this happens. Or, you know, email me again if the severity is higher or whatever, how critical it is. All kinds of stuff like that. It's just vital stuff that you have to have on your web app. So you know, it's and there's just a million more features than that. That's just the base level stuff. It's just my pitch to get you to start using error tracking software like Rollbar in your app because it's just good for you. It's like high fiber cereal for your web app. That's rollbar.com. Thanks again.
Another random thing, Dave. Have you turned on Prettier? Are you on the Prettier wagon yet?
I'm Prettier. Oh. I'm doing it. Slight side effect is it fixes every JavaScript file you open. So now you have a bunch of commits.
Oh, we fixed that though. We did this at CodePen. We made a ghost Git user, like just we used the admin user, and then we just fired off Prettier on the whole code base and then just launched that up as one big commit, and nobody got like the credit for it because you're going to touch like every single file, you know. Yeah. Not that we have like coding competitions, but it does like skew one person's stats a whole bunch if they made that commit.
Like Rachel added 20,000 lines of code.
Right. So we just did that, and now when you open a file, it's already been prettified. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah. And it's so cool. So if anybody out there is listening, like, what does it do? It's different than linting. It doesn't warn you about anything. You just hit save and it just reformats the file. It fixes your quotes. It fixes the indentation. There's not a ton of stuff that you can configure. There's a little bit, but it's pretty opinionated. But just like roll with it because like who cares? Like just roll with its opinionation. I think future versions are going to have a configuration file kind of thing. It doesn't even have a .dot file right now. You just hit save and it just does the thing. But it's great. It means that there's just no commits that are just dumb little white space changes or quote changes or anything like that. As soon as you hit save in your IDE, it has formatted the thing and it's pretty wonderful. And then you can still lint if you want to, you know, like they're separate things.
Yeah. The one thing that's weird about it or like it does the like, if it's over 60 characters, it'll start dropping things to a new line, yes. Like an array or something.
Yeah, that can be weird.
I think it's great, but 60 is maybe just too short. That's because you start.
It's one of the, isn't that one of the things that can be configured? Yeah, that's true.
I think you can. Yeah, but then you have to roll out a configure. I just basically told my team, like, install this in your thing, and like for more or less, like we're getting pretty good JavaScript out of it.
I had a snippet that I put in. Something like a third-party snippet. I was installing like full story on something or something, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, here's a chunk of JS that you should put in your thing, and then hit save, and you know, like they have it formatted one way that kind of makes sense because it's a bunch of like script insertion and like minified stuff, and then you hit save and prettify just like expands the crap out of it. And
well, what I like about it is I don't care what it looks like. I just want it to look the same, and prettier does that for me. Right. Like I hit save. It all looks the same. Every single file looks the same, has the same indention, has the same like return strategy.
Yep. And not only is it the same for you, but you make sure all your rest of your teammates have it too. And it's HTML and CSS and JavaScript. It's great.
Are you using it on your CSS and SAS? Yep. Have you? I don't think I have that configured, and I want to because
it's not as powerful. Like you can do like, I don't know, like, I don't know. It still allows some differences. It's a little more permissive in the SAS world, but
Yeah. Okay. I don't know that it's running because I just even yesterday I hit this like weird. There was like four space tabs in there, you know, which I probably did at some point, but then I was like, I want to be at two right now.
Oh, I would so definitely fix that.
Okay. Yeah. So I just anyway.
Unless, but it does kind of. It listens to, like, if you're in Sublime anyway, which it sounds like you are, right?
I'm in.
Oh, no, you're in code.
I'm code.
Yeah, prettier works in there, too. Whatever. I know in Sublime, it listens to whatever the settings for that particular file is. So, like, if you just happen to open that file and it's in Spaces 2, it will do prettier based on Spaces 2 and not Spaces 4 or whatever. Like, that kind of trumps it. Don't quote me on that, because I think it maybe you can configure it to ignore your editor level setting. But anyway, okay, so imagine you got prettier going and you have linting going, which means, like, dude, you didn't use this variable or, like, what's this weird global or you're missing a semicolon here. That kind of stuff is super useful to have going as well, like an ESLint. Kind of thing. There's SAS lint for your SAS as well, so you can have it be warning you about SAS problems as well. We're a Ruby app, so we've RuboCop going, which is gives us opinionated, like, why are you doing this type of function? You should have, you know, let's do it this other way instead. And then imagine you're like using TypeScript or something. So TypeScript is giving you warnings about like you've changed the type of something here. Like you can really like blast out your editor these days to be incredibly useful. And you're in code, like you're in, like, and I'm seeing code do amazing things like, oh, what's the definition of this function that I'm calling here? Oh, it just pops it up in a tiny little sub window right here for me to look at. What? I feel like that we're like in a golden age of IDEs almost.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's gotten a lot better. I mean, back in the day, it was what? I mean, Coda and TextMate were kind of your TextMate if you're nerdy and Coda if you're a designer.
On Macs, that was the story. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it was pretty, I don't know, it was pretty, I felt like a good world, but you'd kind of have to wait for the annual Coda release to figure out, you know, what you're going to get in your editor. And then, and maybe you were using Mac Rabbit, which became Espresso or whatever, to do all your CSS, which was maybe awesome, by the way. I think SAS killed Mac Rabbit or whatever the CSS sheets or what, I forget what it's called, style. Anyway, you'd have like that, and then, but I think SAS killed those like CSS editor onlys, which is just too bad. And then, but now
BB edit,
like that's the idea of a plugin architecture is amazing. Like it's just, you know, any weird thing you're into, any weird linter, any weird syntax thing, any code theme, any, you know, color theme, color scheme, you know, I can skin my whole entire code now. Like even the little sidebar, you can skin a color. That is amazing.
See what I'm running.
Beautiful, customizable.
I got a Markdown one in just so I can preview Markdown right in there, because why not? I got Emmet in there because you obviously can't live without Emmet. I got one called Reg Replace, which allows me to run a command that runs like an unlimited number of regexes over a file. And I use it because I have some like a whole bunch of them that to help me for editing for CSS tricks. Like you give it, you know, people give me a file in a bunch of different things and it does all the stuff it needs to do for WordPress. Prettier. I have a JSON one that can format JSON nicely, and Sublime Linter, because that's like the parent one to all the linting ones. It like it has all the UI for like what does it look like in the sidebar, and all the linting ones are based on that. So I only have like 8 installed, but they're incredibly useful, all of them. You know, and yeah, of course I'm all skinned up too. Looks great. I have one that like vaguely looks like Material Design.
Nice. Yeah, there's some hot themes for Atom lately. They're pretty
good. Code too, right? And Sublime, of course.
Yeah, code's getting good. I'm rocking Nord. Nord is kind of a very blue, sad theme.
I feel like it is the new hotness. You're right to be on code. Everything you hear that's awesome in editors these days, it's starting to blow out the other ones.
I use Panda too. Panda's good.
As a theme,
Although the default font, and I think it's maybe changed, is because they're using Operator, which costs money or whatever, but the default font is an italic, which I can't really get behind, man. That's tough for me. But I'm using like colorized to like color variables, you know, in my SAS and CSS. I have like a bunch of languages. I'm using Git Blame plugin, which you just like walk down your file, like, you know, down arrow, down arrow, down arrow, and on each line it'll tell you who's at fault for that. So yep. It's kind of like, yep. So like you're kind of like, you don't have
to. I haven't seen it, but blame, yeah, or Rachel showed me that in code. You like, you know who touched that file. It's not even a blame thing, but it's just like who last touched that line of code.
Yeah, it's cool. I get Prettier, of course. Prettified JSON, which is cool. Like if you just have a big blob of JSON, and Prettier may do that for me now. But I just like Command Shift P and say like make this.
I have
like
that same
blow one. This out. And then there's a bunch of different things. But the one I'm kind of into is like to do highlights. Are you familiar with like these ones? Like, basically, if you type in a comment block to do all caps with a colon, it'll highlight it just like in a background color, and it'll also do like fix me, and I think maybe note is another one it'll do. Like like there's a few keywords that hide.
Will it make like a table of contents of to do's across the whole app too, or no?
It'll do that too. So it'll be like, oh, okay, let's go dig up all your to do's, and it'll tell you, you know, you got 50 to do's here, which is cool because I'm in the kind of like.
Do you worry though that? Like, is that the only place you track your to-dos, or do you now have to-dos in multiple places? Well,
we have Git and all that, but this is more like kind of like long-hanging, you know, like, hey, is this named right, you know? And you're like, I don't want to file like a GitHub issue. Like, is this named right? You know, I want to just like let that living code. And
I do it in CSS like, a lot too. Be like, this block is awfully lot like this other block. So like, I don't know that I feel like refactoring it right this second, but it probably should get combined. And like, why is this particular file in accounts/something when really it's way more global than that? And it's,
yeah, and it's basically like something we do have an open issue to like refactor and clean up. It's basically I have left myself future notes for the like go and refactor and
clean up. You know, I'm the only person that does this in our code base, I think. But I put, if I'm going to leave a note, I type left, it's a comment, whatever language we're in, it's inside of a comment. But then inside that, square bracket, Chris, square bracket, colon, which says, I'm leaving this, Chris, I'm saying this, this is my voice. It's not just the generic code god voice. I'm saying this, just because sometimes I'm in, like in Ruby code and I write a little Ruby thing and I'm like, hi, just so you know, like a Ruby person didn't write this code, Chris did. So just letting you know that it's probably not super perfect, you know?
Dude, you know what would be good is if every person on your team had like an emoji assigned to them. Oh, and it was just awesome. like like Chris emoji.
I'd be a little like, cactus or something.
Yeah, yeah. And it'd just be like, I did this. It is not like this code is probably.
I feel like when you say something, if you make a comment of any kind, it should be like, who's saying this? Like,
who's saying this? Because I would like it's to follow.
Great context. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that I think that's probably necessary. I mean, Git Blame, I guess, does this.
Yeah, now you have the sidebar thing. Maybe that's necessary.
But how much better would it be, I don't know, like, attributed to somebody, you know? So then...
Your own name.
Yeah, because eventually, like, you'll have 10,000 to-dos in the code base or something, comments and importance and stuff like that, and it would be good to, like, follow up with people. Like, why'd you do this? Because they probably have an answer, they just don't know it yet. So, today's episode is also brought to you by A Book Apart, abookapart.com. I'm sure most of you, dear Shop Talk Show listeners, know about A Book Apart. But for those who don't, A Book Apart are brief books that help you get back up to speed and back to work. If you kind of decided, hey, I'm going to maybe skip learning about this thing, reading all those blog posts, this is where A Book Apart comes in. This is their specialty. You can catch up and you can learn something, kind of pick up a new skill in a short amount of time. These are kind of small books. For example, SVG. If you want to learn about SVG, Chris Coyer from Shop Talk has a book called Practical SVG. It'll get you up to speed on how things work. And hey, we got some things that are about to drop. This is actually probably a spoiler coming out today. Is Animation at Work, a book about animation. And they also do these handbook things. They're not quite books. They're like baby books that help you... learn things. I'm staring right now at Working the Command Line by Remy Sharp. Remy Sharp is a very, very smart person, and this is probably something you need to check out if you kind of have that fear of the command line. And coming this fall to A Book Apart, Accessibility for Everyone and the new CSS layout, that's probably a display grid. I think we're all kind of looking forward to picking that up and learning that, as well as accessibility. So if you want to get a book, go over to abookapart.com and use the code SHOPTALK, all one word, at checkout for 10% off any order. That's 10% off knowledge. This is great, and I hope you check it out. Thank you, A Book Apart.
Well, we have some more questions. We could manage to get to the second question today.
Second question. I don't think this is even a question, huh?
No, it's just like Justin Nielsen wrote it. Remember we did a few weeks back, we did the, I think there was a dad teaching his 12-year-old girl CSS. Mm-hmm. And it was like, mm-hmm. So we talked about that. Go back if you're interested in that. And you missed that episode. But he's like, remember Flexbox Froggy? Justin is just like, you want to learn CSS? Here's a great way that feels pretty kid friendly.
Yeah. No,
Flexbox Froggy. I remember it blew up. It was huge. People loved it.
I think that's how my coworkers figured out. Finally, it just like, finally got down with Flexbox. I think everyone knew Flexbox and was kind of using it, but no one, we were kind of just typing things, hoping things would render. And Flexbox Froggy really just kind of was like, nope, here's what these words actually mean. And there's a follow-up. Have you played the follow-up? Grid Garden? Mm. CSS Grid Garden is also a follow-up with CSS Grid. And I actually used it and it was very helpful.
Oh, wow. They're like exactly the same looking almost.
Yeah.
That's great. I would like jump ahead. Like if you know Flexbox a little bit, jump to like 15 maybe. In the beginning it's too boring. You're like, oh, justify content. That's a weird way to start this, but sure, flex end. And then it's a little bit like flex end aligns items to the right side of the container. And you're like, well, it's not really. It does in this case. But anyway, I'm not going to be pedantic over Flexbox Froggy, but... I'm sure a kid could like that, and I could see in it, you know, there's all the proof in the world that clicked really hard with lots of people. So
mm-hmm. like adults and well as well. So I think it's pretty universal.
Do a real Alex, one. Yeah, you do it.
Alex R. writes in, I may be out of my depth here, but I've recently started working with Vue. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I also had a recent revelation, thanks to y'all talking about them so much, that SVGs are simply data markup that can be treated as a DOM element. My question is there much use for SVGs as a Vue component? I'm still trying to wrap my head around everything I can do with this. Maybe we should back up. Chris, what's a Vue component?
Well, I mean, we're just like, what? I don't know if Vue matters so much here, but it's just kind of like JSX, right? Like anything that is JavaScript powered markup, which Vue happens to work in.
And Vue has it's JSX-y. It has a little bit more of like HTML flavor, you know?
Is it technically not JSX in Vue, or is it?
Oh, see, here's where I don't want to commit to anything. I think Vue is more like data that populates an element. Like,
but I'm sure a lot of us more the picture it, you know, like you don't have to work with .vue files in Vue, but I think that's what's really popular about Vue is literally naming your files .vue, V-U-E, and then within that file you get this like. It's like it can be like a component where there's HTML in there or this JSX looking stuff. And there's like functions that handle what's going to happen with that thing. And there can even be styles in there can scope or not scope to that component. It's really pretty cool. But okay, imagine like divs, spans, sections, buttons, inputs, forms, field sets, whatever. All that stuff can just be right in there in Vue or in JSX or anything. Why not? Mm-hmm. Circle, rect, use all the, you know.
Yeah.
Why not? Like, and they absolutely can be. So you're right, Alex. You throw them in there. Like what would you want to do with dynamic DOM components? I don't know. Maybe it's a chart that moves. Maybe it's text that, you know, like, maybe it doesn't do anything fancy. It's just sitting there, but you need to use it in your Vue component. So you do. Like, you know, I don't, you know, I understand you're just trying to wrap your head around it. I think a lot of people are, but yeah, I mean, there's really not too much different between a rect or a polygon or a polyline and a div, you know, it's just a thing in an angle bracket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you could kind of come up with things that make that easier, you know, like, because the Vue component, you can kind of do the little bit of math you need, I guess, before you inject something. So, or concatenation or whatever. And I think you could totally could. I wonder though, because SVG has that weird thing. The namespace, like document create element namespace SVG. Have you ever tried or ran into that, Chris? It's kind of like the SVG create element NS. Have you seen?
Yes.
Am I okay? So when you start doing a and like manipulating an SVG or something like that, you have to use this. You can't do document.create element. You have to do document create element NS, and then you have to use the like weird URL for SVG and then the keyword SVG.
Yeah, there's some gotchas available for you.
Yeah, so that would be the only like I don't know how friendly Vue is, you know, is Vue's power in manipulating like HTML, or is it in or can it be extended to this different namespace? That's the only weird thing. But I'm sure people like Sarah Drasner are doing that. You know, I know people are already like doing Canvas and VR and stuff with Vue and React. So I think it's obviously possible. I just don't know the quirks there, but I think you could totally do it. So
yeah, especially I think if it's like dynamic in some way, you'll enjoy that, I'm sure.
I think your bar chart is like a great example, you know, like, could you just make a line plot or something? Could you just make something really simple with like a cool API, you know, like
it's the kind of thing that's like, going to be all over CodePen too. I mean, if you can craft some searches, look around on CodePen for people that are using both Vue
and SVG together in a pen. And I'm sure you'll see stuff with like sliders, you know, that like move the slider and move something in the illustration or whatever, or mm-hmm. it's a timeline or something dynamic in some way. Those two things would go together like peanut butter and jelly.
I've heard a lot of good things about Vue lately, so I like.
Yeah, it seems like it seems like the way to go. Although I'm still just like not. I feel like I would pick it for sure to play with for something. Not. I'm not trying to say don't use it for anything. I mean, you can use it in production all you want. Please do whatever. Just that I ship products in React. Like I have a vested interest in deep learning React. So when I get a chance to play with these things, I pick React because I need to be better at it. So I'm personally trying to just, you know, go with React as much as I can to help my own deep learning so that I'm more useful at work, you know?
Yep. That's smart. All right. Last question. Chris Wong writes in, hi, longtime listener, first time asker. Awesome. Thank you, Chris. I am a front end engineer about to start a project at work using React
for the
first time. Hey, what a segue. As I'm doing research on the best approach to styling our web app, I've come across so many different so-called quote unquote best practices for building styles. These include using inline styles plus radium, which we kind of talked about on our inline styles episode of Shop Talk.
Radium.
It's like just the package that
I know there's a lot of them, glamorous,
yeah, all the... or a combination of preprocessors, less SAS, less SCSS SAS, plus post processors, auto prefixers, CSS modules, etc. What are your thoughts on using style sheets versus only inline styles for a web app, using many different dynamic components and functionality, drag and drop, card resizing, etc.? What set of tools do you find to be the best fit? Thanks in advance.
I don't know. No, I mean, here's one possibility. You don't have to do any of this inline styling stuff with React at all. Like, I know you said a combination of preprocessors and whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's how I mostly work with a React app, is just write CSS however, like I normally do, and use React for the HTML and JavaScript stuff. Like, you don't need to use any kind of inline style thing if you don't want to at all, and there's plenty of situations where I think that's the smart move. I wrote not long ago, where we did that future of kind of episode where I talked about that I feel like the future is in apps like this, in which that you're going with a new JavaScript kind of thing to help you manage state and all the reasons that you might go with this, that the future of that is a combination of those two things. Like, when you write new styles, you'll always be making a choice. Am I writing something global that I intend to sprinkle throughout this entire app, or am I writing a style that's specific to this component? Because component is probably the right word there. That's what you're building in these apps a lot. So that I do feel like calls for some kind of inline style system. That's one of the reasons that Vue is so popular. This scoping of styles to components is a solved problem in Vue. Vue ships with that. That's part of the deal. It just comes with the Vue ecosystem, as far as I know. In React, it does not. You need some kind of thing to help you with that. Perhaps Radium is one of them. I know Glamorous is another one. I know CSS modules is one, but I think that kind of turned into Glamorous. I'm not sure exactly what the differences are there. There's some great posts that compare and contrast all of the different things there. There's some of them that literally do apply those styles to components in inline styles. It's becoming more popular to have them figured out what the styles are needed, and it actually produces a .css file that you then ship in the normal way in your app, because shipping CSS has some benefits, like the fact that it's blocking and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different philosophies in all this world. I don't know that it's entirely shaken out yet, but I do know that it's tons of people are finding it cool and useful and powerful, and it feels like the future.
I think just do it inline, and that's different advice. But I think you just have to know the trade-offs, which is your CSS is now coupled to your JavaScript, which might be great from your point of view, but it has to download, parse, execute all with the JavaScript on low-end devices like 3G, you know, junk phones, you have to know that that is the trade-off. That's the trade-off. You're basically sending, putting everything into JavaScript and kind of choosing a worse than CSS, like CSS OM version of CSS. And that might be fine. You just have to know that that's the trade-off, I think. And so, you know, and if you in the past have had a lot of style collisions and junk with writing global CSS, this might be for you. So that's all. That's maybe my final statement. I think just the most important thing is get it done and know the trade-offs. That's me. Keep momentum in your project, and especially in your like side projects and stuff like that. So just keep momentum, do something that sounds interesting, but understand the trade-offs. I don't think anyone understands or talks about the trade-offs. So there you go.
Rock and roll.
All right, Chris, I think we're going to have to wrap this up here. We're hitting the almost close to the hour mark. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart favorite this up. That's how people find out about the show. We really appreciate all y'all who have done that in the past. It's, you know, the show has grown and, you know, is listened to because y'all are excited about it. We really appreciate that. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. And Chris, guess what? We got a job to talk about.
Yeah, we sure do. So it's for a company called 20 Over 10, which is cool. They had bought a job posting before for Shop Talk Show that never aired because they filled the job posting so quickly. So this is the CodePen job board that, you know, goes to the Shop Talk Show job board as well as the CSS Tricks job board. So they do web design for the financial industry. They're looking for somebody remotely, which so it appeals to wherever you live on Earth, which I absolutely love because I'm just an advocate of the remote lifestyle, as it were. And it's, you know, they're looking for somebody who's good at JavaScript and HTML and CSS. SAS is a plus, they say. I bet tons of you know that type of stuff. To apply, email jobs@20over10.com. Let's see, what else do they say here? That they're hiring the position. They say that the last person they hired worked out so well, they're one of their lead designers now. So you know that there's some upward mobility there, which Whoa. I think is super cool. It'd be great to highlight that the position is for a client-facing designer developer, so you'll be responsible for designing and building websites on their own platform. They're looking for someone who has great friendly communication skills. It's a small team of creatives who have a lot of autonomy, so deadlines are important, but the flexibility in being a remote full-time but remote position should draw some of you in, I hope. You get to manage your own schedule. You're working there. So, you know, you're on Slack, you're on Trello, you're on their Dropbox, you're in their Google Apps, but you're making your own hours. Oh, at 20 over 10, again, check out the CodePen job board for the Shop Talk Show job board, really, for the full posting. If you want to read all about them or if you're interested in applying, it's the email address is jobs@20over10.com, all spelled out.
All right. Well, good luck, everybody. Thank you so much. And hopefully your web development is going great. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Bye! ShopDocShow.com.